सोच विचार के साथ मेरा नाम नदीम उल हक है
और मेरा नाम अंजुम अल्ताफ है।
वेलकम टू सोच विचार। वी कंटिन्यू आवर कन्वर्सेशन विद हसन खवार ऑन द सिविल सर्विस रिफॉर्म इशू एंड नाउ वील टेक अप द इशू ऑफ द न्यूली फॉर्म्ड टास्क फोर्स एंड मूव ऑन टू अदर टॉपिक्स। दिस इज द कंक्लूडिंग सेगमेंट ऑफ दैट पॉडकास्ट। Tell me, this new task force that is in place, which I don't know what it's going to do, comment on the task force. It's got about 18 members, about 8 are current civil servants, about 3 are retired civil servants. Do you see any problem with this task force or you think it's okay?
Okay, so there are, of course, positives and negatives with the task force. Mm-hmm. I think the positives are that it's a very, very diversified group of people. Mm-hmm. There are people like you mm-hmm. in the task force mm-hmm. who have been voicing their concerns very openly mm-hmm. and who have specific views on how civil service should mm-hmm. be structured. Mm-hmm. There are people like Shahid Kardar. Mm-hmm. And of course, there are people like Suleiman Ghani who are from the civil service, mm-hmm. but who are very progressive and who knows the policy space mm-hmm. very, very well. I think one set of serious objections mm-hmm. which is there is that people from one group, which is also my parent group, mm-hmm. are there, mm-hmm. and there is no representation from any other service group, okay. from Audit and Account Service or Federal Board of Revenue, mm-hmm. Customs, or anyone else. Mm-hmm. So any reform package that will come out of the task force will run the risk mm-hmm. of being favorable to any one group. Mm-hmm. So I think you run that risk, and I think it should be more diversified, mm-hmm. and you should at least have a few other representatives from other services so that at least they have a say okay. in the process. So, for example, you need to have Auditor General mm-hmm. or the senior most person from the Inland Revenue Service mm-hmm. or police or somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So I think that is one area. Mm-hmm. The second is that the task force has not been given mm-hmm. a very tight timeline or a life mm-hmm. to come up with a proposal. So it's not clear whether it's just going to be an advisory forum or it's going to mm-hmm. oversee implementation as well. Mm-hmm. The terms of reference talk about mm-hmm. developing an implementation plan. I think any task force, mm-hmm. whenever it's made, mm-hmm. should be given a tight timeline right. in which they have to come up with something. And it depends whether you give them the mandate to develop something mm-hmm. or you give them the mandate to oversee that. Mm-hmm. I think we can have a discussion, okay. but it should be very, very clear. It should not be an open-ended process.
Fair point.
Now, apart from that, when you look at people there, I see some very credible names. I see academics. Mm-hmm. I see critiques. Mm-hmm. I see former civil servants. Mm-hmm. I see women there. Mm-hmm. I think it's a good mix. Mm-hmm. One could always think of other names, but I think if you are getting down to notifying a policy, you can think of the best people you know, and that's how it's done. So all in all, I have very high hopes with the task force, with people like you, Kardar Saab, Ishrat Saab, Sania Nishtar, Suleiman Ghani, everyone there. I personally have very high hopes that the task force will come up with very sound, very serious recommendations on how to reform civil service.
Okay, the first meeting is coming up very soon. So give us a strategy on how you think that this, I mean, forget about the procedures and logistics, etc. What are the key things, outline the key principles that the task force should look at?
I think first of all, you need to look at the problem with civil service, mm-hmm. that what is wrong, mm-hmm. what is it that the civil service mm-hmm. is not delivering, mm-hmm. and then see whatever you are proposing, mm-hmm. whether it's addressing this problem.
Okay.
So for example, mm-hmm. as I generally see the criticism, mm-hmm. if the problem is with hegemony of one group, let's say Pakistan Administrative Service, mm-hmm. will turning that into a national executive service will create another elite group, mm-hmm. or is it going to solve some particular problem? So I think you have to be very, very focused in terms of what is it that you are going to solve. Do you want to create a market open for talent, or do you want to work on particular services, make them strong and make them more capable to deliver? Because you have to realize that even if you open the market for private talent, Pakistan's talent market is not that deep. And the risk is that if you do away with the present structures, mm. you might not get better people from the market. Mm. So while I agree that there is some appetite for totally changing things, I would say a word of caution that you have to really see what you are doing away with, and you have to be really sure of what's out there if you do away with the present system, or else we can end up in a vacuum. So this is what I feel.
Okay, but tell me, just very briefly, in terms of going forward, should we think of the civil service in terms of a unified whole? Or, like, for example, the civil service that we have, as I said, we have this system where everybody goes from grade 17 to grade 22, grade 17 to 19 is district government, grade 19 to 20 is provincial government, 20 to 22 is federal government. Should we think of it like that? And should we have the unified pay scales?
Okay, so I'll ask two questions. I think you should totally look at restructuring the pyramid. So it should not be like a vertical box where everyone who gets into grade 17 goes up to grade 22. If he has enough number of years of service, I think it should be a pyramid with a wider base. And you should have a mechanism to filter out people who are not working somewhere in the mid, so that people have more incentive to make it to the top, and they know that they have to go through one or more filters. Okay. And the pyramid should be wide, the base should be wide, the top should be small, okay. Number one. I think unified pay scales are not going to work. When you look at, and I have written extensively on that, when you look at grade 1 to 22, you find out that you have about 15 to 16 tiers to differentiate between drivers and peons and clerks and whatnot. Even the drivers can range from 7 or 8 different grades. But when you look at the management or the technical staff, whether they are bureaucrats, teachers, doctors, you are only giving them 6 grades. I don't think that can do enough justice with that. And a unified pay system inhibits your capability to respond to market realities. So, for example, if you want to pay more to doctors or teachers or to civil service, and you have a unified pay system, you end up into a big political problem. So I think you need to do away with a unified rate system.
Okay. And would you think, for example, these services, you mentioned that there's only one group represented in the task force, but now we've got in your common, how many services do we have?
I think there are about 11 or 12.
11 or 12 services. Okay. Yes. And then there's the provincial service too, right?
Yes. So in every province.
And the DMG sits on top, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's called Pakistan Administrative Service now.
Pakistan Administrative Service now. Okay. Now, so that's one thing. The second thing is that, look, so should we retain that system? And then the biggest complaint is technocrats are always complaining, or I hate the term technocrat because it's too politically motivated here. But the professionals, for example, the engineers, the economists, the, you know, whatever, the energy people, the water people, they're always complaining that they have no room in the system. And some of them are sitting at the bottom of the pyramid. For example, I know doctors can't rise above grade 20. Right, even professors can't rise above grade 20. Town planners can't go above grade 19. The agricultural specialists can't go above grade 19. Is that a good system, a fair system, a system capable of retaining and developing skills?
No, I think these are the perils of a unified pay system. So doctors can go as high in their system as they should go, probably. But because you have put a grade or a tag on that, they would start comparing them with a federal secretary, right? Maybe a senior most doctor needs to be paid even more than a federal secretary, right? But a grade or a unified grade inhibits your ability to kind of price him according to that. And that's the reason you need to do away with that. And once you do away with that, I think much of these complaints will go away, because you really should not compare a senior most doctor, a senior most engineer, or a town planner with a civil servant who is giving policy advice.
Good point. Yeah.
Whether you need to pay him more or less, that's a different question. That depends on the market demand and supply.
But tell me, is it possible? I mean, payment is a big issue. Civil servants feel they're very underpaid.
Yes. So that's a very interesting phenomena. Mm-hmm. I think civil servants are severely underpaid, mm-hmm. but the government spends an exorbitant amount of money on them. Mm-hmm. And that's the anomaly. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the cost incurred to the government mm-hmm. in terms of the houses and cars and facilities, it ends up to a big number. Mm-hmm. When you look at their salaries, mm-hmm. that's a very meager salary. Mm-hmm. And I think the government should move towards monetization, mm-hmm. where you will get some resistance. Mm-hmm. Because the absence of monetization only favors mm-hmm. the selected few. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about these huge GOR houses, they are really like 60, 70, 80 houses in GOR1. Mm-hmm. When you look at the number of civil servants, mm-hmm. they far exceed those houses. Mm-hmm. I think if you end up in a direction where you are monetizing these benefits for everyone, I think bulk of the civil service is going to welcome this change and would be much relieved. Mm-hmm. And I think the compensation package would be much more transparent in terms of what the government is spending mm-hmm. and in terms of what they are getting.
Mm-hmm. Because right now, the other thing is that when you pay them in this fashion, aren't they more corruptible? For example, if I can give plots to somebody, then he will obviously, his skin in the game is plots, not the 100,000 he gets, right? So if the prime minister's ability to give him plots and maybe even give him two or three plots, obviously he'll work harder for the prime minister rather than for the system, right? And at the same time, if the prime minister can give him a better house as opposed to a worse house, then obviously he'll work for that. Some people, for example, have houses in GOR and then houses in Islamabad too. Some people I know, for example, one DC has a house in his district headquarters as well as in GOR, Lahore, right? And one of the reasons that I think Lahore and Punjab does so well is because it's got GOR. Quetta doesn't have a GOR. So Quetta suffers. Right? So I think these things also need to be taken into account and discussed. But unfortunately, we leave that out of any reform sources. For example, I'll tell you one thing that's been done, which is quite remarkable, which is that judges have raised their salaries to maybe, I think, how much is it? 10 or 12 lakhs now?
I heard it's quite decent.
Right?
Yes.
And this is for life too. Their pension is the same as their salary. Right? Yet the judges Absolutely. Are also increasing their perks.
So, yes.
I don't understand why a judge should now get a house and a car when his salary is at market levels, right? So the civil service will also start gaming the system if they feel that they can increase their salaries while also keeping perks. At the same time, the perks are tax-free, right? So there's a huge...
Yes, but...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
But, Dr. Sir, they are not monetized, no? And that's the problem.
They
so the government ends up spending what? Yeah. They should be monetized. I don't agree with this philosophy of giving plots to civil servants because that also incentivizes them to keep a dysfunctional land market because if they want to get a premium.
Very good point.
And then some of the houses are position based. So if you are a deputy commissioner or a commissioner, you get a house. But some of the houses in GORs and in Islamabad F6 are tied to individuals.
Right.
And there is no transparent criteria for getting them. And what you get is a bulk of the civil servants getting 12 or 15 or 20,000 as house rent
right.
without any house to live.
Right.
And that is what the bulk of the civil service is facing.
Right.
There are very few people, unfortunately, who are living in those houses. And I think monetization is going to do away with that problem. So I think any reform effort should keep monetization as one of its key priorities.
Okay. Now, let me ask you one couple of last questions because I think this is getting far longer than I thought we should make it. But anyways, I don't think our research community, you're now also a part of a research community because you do consulting, etc. Why has our research community never contributed to this important subject? There is hardly any research on this subject. And when we are going to this task force or whichever group we go into, there's no research available. Why is that?
So I have seen pieces of research and work on specific elements. So work on incentives in a particular department, mm-hmm. in excise department, Lahore, for example. Mm-hmm. But yes, you are right. There is no general body of research available. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason for that is that there was no demand for that before this. And I just hope that with you and all the others being there is enough demand to do that research. Because research and also researchers have not had access to data that they would have needed to do research.
What data do you need for civil service reform?
Okay, so for example, let's talk about recruitment, right? Mm-hmm. So you have a system in place. Mm-hmm. You think that you are able to filter out people according to their aptitude. Mm-hmm. You have a psychological test. Mm-hmm. And then year after year, you keep on passing people through that pipeline without ever doing an impact assessment mm-hmm. of whether what you thought really materialized into a reality. Mm-hmm. People you thought should be brighter, whether they end up being brighter or higher performers or not. Whether your psychological test, did they work properly or not? Mm. Or do you end up getting people who are not psychologically fit in the service? Mm. And if you, let's say, want to do that kind of an impact assessment, you need access to career profiles of civil servant.
That should be something that the Public Services Commission should be doing on a regular basis.
Absolutely.
So why are they not doing it?
And again, that's another question I think that you need to ask in the task force meeting, Doctor. I don't know, frankly. Okay. I don't have an answer.
Okay. But other than that, for example, what data do we need? I think we also make too much of data. I think consultants have forced us to, this is going on another tangent that I should discuss with you at some point. I think consultants have talked data up too much. What data do we need? When the Brits designed the civil service system, they had no data at all, right? And when they designed their own civil service system, they had no data at all. What data do we need? And the data that we need, I think we have right there in front of us. We see the houses, we see the positions, we see the job, we see no policy papers, we see... That's all data, isn't it?
Doctor, do you or do I have access to how much government spends on these houses? How many houses are there? On what criteria are they allocated? What's the application pipeline look like? Even if you have to analyze objectively and put evidence out there that, let's say, the houses are incentivizing or disincentivizing a large group of civil servants, you will need data for that.
Right? No, I've got the data. I've got the data. I can see the houses. I can see the situation. Now, I may not be able to give you every last little detail, but I don't think we need to wait for that. We see the data in front of us.
Let me put a question to you. Do you think having the GR1 is an incentive to the civil service as a whole, or is it a disincentive to the civil service as a whole?
Oh, it's a
since you have the data.
No, the houses are a big part of the incentive structure of the civil service. Even though all of them don't get it, I agree with you. All of them don't get it, but the goal is very clear. It's like you set up a prize money somewhere, like the setting up the Nobel Prize of the Wimbledon. It's a big incentive. Only one man wins the Wimbledon, or only one. I mean, I can quote you many papers on this. Rosen, for example, had a very famous paper on economics of superstars, etc. And most management systems are built like that. That's why Jensen and Meckling, for example, put forward the concept of bonuses, that you give these guys bonuses. Not everybody gets the same bonus, but we compete for the bonus. So I look at the houses or the plots. These are bonuses that are given to civil servants for performance.
But not on a pre-agreed criteria.
Very visible bonuses.
So, yes, they are visible bonuses for a selected few. But when you look at civil services,
for the few who are capable.
For all the services, I think it acts more as a disincentive or a cause of frustration to many who do not end up in those houses rather than being an incentive for the service as a whole.
No, fair enough.
So we can debate that.
Look at it this way, is that I was, I wanted to play tennis. I wanted to win the Wimbledon. Never did, right? But it was a big incentive for me to try and practice hard and whatever little tennis I played. I played because, hey, I thought I'd win the Wimbledon. So it's the same story here. But anyways, let's leave that aside. So I think this is very important to consider. Why are universities not researching it? Why are people not researching? And that's a question I'll leave you with. But my last question now, Hassan, is I always ask my guests, can you give a suggestion of a book, movie, whatever you like, that you think that people who hear this podcast should read, listen to, because it's so formative, it's so important, because it influenced your life and it should influence their life too. So what would you recommend?
Doctor, I would recommend to have a shorter podcast. Mm-hmm. And if you can do a video cast or a video podcast, I think people would like to look at it more.
I'm going to start.
Because generally they feel more comfortable. And generally if you have a narrower focus or a set set of questions,
yeah.
and let's say you'd say a 10-minute or 15-minute video podcast,
yeah.
I think the viewership is likely to increase.
Okay. Fair enough. No, I was asking not about the podcast. I was asking about a book or a movie or something that you think people should, that has influenced you a lot and you think other people should look at it too.
So I think from a policy point of view, there is a book by Daniel Kahneman who has worked on behavioral economics on thinking fast and slow.
Thinking fast and slow.
Yeah, I think that's a great book for anyone to look at how irrational thinking in human beings can affect major economic and policy decisions. I would think that's a great
book. Okay, thanks, Hassan. That is a wonderful conversation, rather long, but nevertheless, it's good to have some long conversations too sometimes. So hope to catch up with you on some of the subjects that you've been working on in the future.
Thank you so much, Doctor.
It's
a pleasure and an honor to be on this podcast with you. Thank you so much.
सोच विचार के साथ मेरा नाम नदीम उल हक है
और मेरा नाम अंजुम अल्ताफ है।